All right, welcome everybody. Thank you guys so much. I love all the meetings between the meetings. Okay, so if everyone just go ahead and close your eyes if you like. Take a deep breath. We'll start with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is the workshop titled Steps 6 and 7. And we thank you to Jeremy. She's going to be our timer right here up front. Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or broadcasting media, in protecting the anonymity of all members present or mentioned here today. We hope you hear something that at this meeting which you can take away with you and use. We respectfully request, however, that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being recorded and will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. To Hatters, OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, are requested to speak only to their personal recovery in OA. And to avoid implying endorsement of any outside enterprise as OA as a whole, we also ask that you not record any workshop with cell phones or any other type of recording equipment. This morning, our speaker has 30 minutes to share on Step 6 and 7. Would you give me a warm welcome to welcome Marie J.
Good morning. How about let's begin with a prayer. Big breath. God, I surrender this to you because of my own will, this would be a disaster. And with you in charge, it will deliver exactly what is needed to the people who need to hear it. And I hope that I can be a part of that. And I hope that I can do your will, relieve me of the bondage of self, any of my character defects that involve all of myself, my fears, and allow me to have humility and bring your word to this meeting. Take away my difficulties. My difficulties always originate in myself. And I turn this over to you and bring the words that the people need to hear to grow and to recover. Amen. I am Marie J., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And I say that, hi, thank you. I say that because in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on our title page, it says the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. I'm not cured, but I'm recovered today. And I have been recovered for almost a year from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that is a miracle because for my entire 54 years before I got into program 4 years ago, I was a compulsive overeater of the worst kind. And I got into program, a little qualification here. I got into program in 2013, and I was like the poster child, man. I was six meetings a week. I lost 80 pounds straight off the bat. Man, I was doing it. And it was all self-reliance. I wasn't working the program. I wasn't working the book. I wasn't working it. I was just, you know, dieting with group support. And it's what I did then. And I had to do that in order to get where I am today. And so any steps we take and any progress we make to get to recovery. And all along the way, I'm grateful for every lesson I had because I had to do the things I did in order to get where I am today, and more will be revealed. I'm not done. More will be revealed, and I'm so grateful for that. So I've been 4+ years in OA. I lost 80 pounds, and then I got to step 9, and I relapsed because I rested on my laurels. I really thought, I got this. I never got to 10, 11, and 12. I didn't relapse by eating off my red list, and I think this is really important. I had a red list. And as long as I was leaving that red list, I was abstinent. That's how I approached it in the beginning. And really, I was relapsed for 4 months before I realized that I was relapsed. because I started volume eating, and I didn't have a professional telling me how to weigh and measure my food or what to eat or how many proteins or what this or how to balance my food, because I was so terrified that if somebody told me how to eat and work my program, that I would die. That was a true feeling. So I relapsed at step 9. 4 months later, I had 35 pounds back on. I got back into program. I got a new sponsor, and I worked the program. And guess what? I got to step 9 again, and I relapsed again. So, and I relapsed, thank God, the second relapse was one meal, and that was last October. One meal, I had one bite. But I knew enough. I had enough recovery because I was working the big book already for 6 months. And I started to feel my self-will and self-reliance come back in, and I broke my abstinence. And then I got right back on because I had the foundation of practicing this program and getting back into recovery immediately. So October 7th, I will have my first year of complete recovery and total abstinence. And it's just a miracle. So what saved me is this big book. This is what really got me to true recovery. And I have since now, I'm down 90 pounds in my program. I work the big book. I live in 10, 11, and 12, and it's just a miracle. And also relying on professionals to tell me what I don't know. Professionals who taught me how to weigh and measure my food, and it actually makes me safer. So today we're going to talk about step 6 and 7. And step 6 says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I like to call defects of character also liabilities, because it's sometimes hard to look and go, wow, I'm so defective, you know, and that goes into some morbid reflection about myself or humiliation about myself. It's just liabilities. There are things that I can choose in my life that are either recovery or not recovery. And if I choose not recovery, that's a liability, and that's a character defect. And so I caution people just not to get hooked up in the words, like to have God remove these. You know, people sometimes get hooked into the language. It doesn't matter what you call your higher power, just that you have one. And being entirely ready, we were entirely ready. That's willingness. And willingness is what this step is all about. And willingness is an action. It's just not something I have in my head. It is something that I take action and I do. And we're going to talk about how I actually take the action on steps 6 and 7. So step 7 is humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And again, don't get tied up in those words. You know, it says ask him to. You know, it doesn't matter. Your God can be love. Your God can be, your higher power can be anything you want it to be. Just don't get tied up in any kind of language that's going to prevent you from being able to work this program. So in the big book, we have steps 6 and 7 are on page 76. There are 164 pages of the first part of the directions, the instructions in the big book. Two paragraphs are devoted to steps 6 and 7. And like, oh, okay, how do we do this? You know, and so there's all these other books, and you know, the Overeaters 12 and 12 is very useful in working steps 6 and 7 and really going into the details. But it really boils down to willingness and humility. That's the message of step six and seven. And so how do I work it? So I passed out this this little sheet. If you don't have one, there's one on an empty chair. This is how I've kind of taken those two paragraphs and said, okay, how do I break this down? First of all, I have to have entire abstinence if I am going to work any of the steps. So in the big book on, entire abstinence is on page XXX in the doctor's opinion, and it says, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And so you can go and figure that out, what that is. That's not in this step, but entire abstinence is necessary for me to be able to work all the steps. And so what does that give me? It gives me clarity so I can see the truth, so I can see the truth about my character defects. And my character defects show up as anything with self. So this, what I do in the step six is the top part of this left column says liability. So I went out and I got 100 words that represent character defects. And you can actually find it on oabigbook.info. They have a good sheet that has a whole bunch of character defects, but they're not all of them. I found some more. And I went through and I circled every single character defect that applied to me. And then I went through and I looked at those character defects and I stack ranked them and said, what are my top 15? What are the ones that I go to when things are upsetting me? And when I'm abstinent, guess what? All my feelings come up, all of life shows up, and all of a sudden I have to deal with life without food. And when I feel triggered in that, I can go to this list. So here's my top 15. I have revealed humbly to all of you in the room, these are the top 15 that I go to. And perfection, self-centered, self-righteous, self-reliant, self-important. You know, I'm really this big egotist. I mean, that's how I operate. And in the big book, also on page 14, and this is just such a revealing thing too, when Bill is working is with Ebby and finally gets it, like it finally clicks, on 14 he says, simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. That's the key. We have to get rid of our selfishness, our self-centeredness, our self-righteousness, all these things that are liabilities to my recovery. So when I'm upset with my husband, right there, I have a choice. I can go to understanding, compassion, I can see his side of things, or I can go right to, you're wrong, I'm right, self-centeredness, selfishness, self-pity, what about me, I work so hard, what are you doing? You know, all this stuff, it's just a choice. You know, I have this analogy, we live in the mountains, and you know, you're driving down the center lane of with the yellow line going through, and we get boulders, right, falling off the mountains. And the boulders land, I had this in a dream, the boulder falls in the middle of the road, and that represents the obstacles in my life. That's life showing up, a boulder falls in the middle of the road. And I make a choice. I decide I'm going to go right or I'm going to go left and get back around that boulder and get back on the road, right? So those are my obstacles that come up. And if I go right, I'm choosing recovery. If I go left, I'm choosing to act out in one of these liabilities. And hopefully I'll get back to the center line. But the thing about, I think, step six and seven is it's not shame and humiliation we want to go to. It's information. Oh, I took a left turn and went around and operated in self-righteousness. Okay, get back on the road and make an amend and keep moving along, recognizing that my liabilities and my character defects do not have to be something shameful. They're just a part of me. I accept them. I'm human. They're never going to change. I can ask them to be removed one day at a time. And when I can pause before I yell at my husband, then I'm acting in recovery. Pause. Okay, let's take a different route. Let's not go to self-righteousness and self-centered. So the middle column here gives me a reminder of do this instead, I call it. It's the do this instead column. So when I'm acting out and I catch myself acting out, this is actually, mine is laminated and it is a bookmark. So I have handy dandy on both sides, bookmark. I have like 16 copies of these, and they're in every book I own. So that anytime I'm acting out, I can just go, whoa, what's going on? You know, and I can look at the list and go, oh, I'm feeling prideful. Wow, I'm feeling self-pity. And I can look at it and say, okay, well, what can I do instead? Oh, let's see. I can go to realistic goals. I can be grateful and accepting. How do I do that? I can sit down, take 2 minutes to write 3 gratitudes. You know, when I'm being self-righteous, you know, what can I do? I can be humble and understanding. Okay, usually I'm being self-righteous with my husband. So before I yell at him, I can take a pause and I can take a minute and run into the bathroom and write down, okay, what's his perspective on this? How's, you know, what's he got on his plate? You know, how am I being, you know, how can I get... In order to be humble, I got to be vulnerable, you know. So now I got to go back out there. I can either yell, which is going around the left side of the boulder, or I can go around the right side of the boulder and say, "You got a lot on your plate. What's going on? You know, can I help? can I, you know, what's troubling you? I can be a little bit more compassionate and understand. And then the third column here is assets. These are things that I'm good at, you know, because when we get to the seventh step, what do we say? God, take all of me, good and bad. That's our seventh step prayer. Take all of me, good and bad. And true humility is when I can know that I have good and bad in me. I have dark and light. You know, so many of us try, I know I try to get rid of all these. Like, the sixth step is going to get rid of all of my character defects, and then I'm going to be perfect. Oh, good. But perfection is one of my character defects. So I have to know what my assets are so that I don't go to morbid self-reflection. Go into this humiliation. That's useful to no one. And that's right in the big book, too. I don't know what page it's on. I probably do. No, I don't. But it says in step 10, that's where it is, we don't go to morbid self-reflection because it's not useful to anybody. And our primary purpose here, my primary purpose here, is to be useful to people and to carry the message of recovery. And once I get neutral on the food, man, is that not the problem, you know? The food's the solution. The food's the solution when my character defects come up. I just want to cover them with food. But once the food is out of there and I'm neutral and I'm abstinent, then life shows up. And how do I deal with life? Do I have 20 left or 10 left?
You have 15 left.
Thank you. Okay. I got to start talking faster. Okay. So, in looking at my assets, it helps prevent me from going into morbid self-reflection. I am a good listener. I am empathetic. I am confident and dependable. I'm optimistic. I am all these things. And I am also self-righteous and self-centered and self-involved and fearful and judgmental. And it's just a choice. Which one am I going to choose to act on? And that's what the steps 6 and 7 are about. So I want to illustrate a little bit with my husband, because he's such a good person to illustrate with. Because life is showing up for me now, right? I've been recovered for a while. Food's been neutral for a really long time. And I weigh and measure my food. Life is really going good, except I got this husband who doesn't obey my commands. And so we had a fight last week. And it wasn't really a fight. It was just me totally demoralizing him and attacking him. So I don't usually go there. I haven't gone there in a long time. And I thought, wow, God is putting this right in my lap to look at 6 and 7, because that is the key to my being able to work 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 if I don't have 6 and 7 down. So I attacked him. He didn't do something I wanted him to do. He didn't do something that he committed to do. And I attacked him. And called him names and did all kinds of things. I was acting out in self-righteousness and self-centeredness and judgment. And I removed myself after the attack, and I was just fuming. And I didn't have any willingness. I didn't have any willingness. I knew those character defects are up. This thing is everywhere in my house. I'm looking at it going, yep, yep, and I don't care. I'm not willing. He's wrong. He's wrong. And I was really stuck on it. And it happens. It happens to all of us because we're human and human beings will go there. And so I couldn't be up on my self-righteous high horse saying, oh, I'm so recovered because I don't have these things happen. I do. Life shows up and it's hard sometimes. And he even came in. My husband, who's not in program, but has listened to me so much on sponsee calls, walks in and says, I'm sorry I didn't do what I said I did, what I would do. I'm like, oh, my God, he's making amends to me. I can't believe it, and I have no willingness. And I didn't, and I went to bed, and I got up in the morning. But when I rolled over in the morning, realizing that my addict had such a grip on me, I rolled over, as I do every single morning, looking for my foundation. And I said, God, I'm powerless over this. I'm powerless over my character defects that I know I don't want to be acting out in. And I believe you will, and you always do, and you always have taken over and given me sanity. I know and I believe that God will restore me to sanity. And I made a decision in that moment to turn it over to God. And then I got out of bed, and I went and I wrote it up as a 10-step, and I called somebody, and I reached out, and I did what the 10-step tells me to do. I reached out to be useful to someone else, and then I marched my butt into his office and said, I was self-righteous, self-seeking, self-important. I attacked you, and I made my amend, and it was gone. I mean, that is the beauty of this. So in working step six, I do this little document because this is what gets me to making my amends. If I don't know what my character defects are, if I don't know what my liabilities are, I'll just go on until one day I'm going to eat and gain the 90 pounds back. And that's criminal. And it isn't even about gaining the weight back. It's I'm going to lose the sanity. It was until 11 o'clock that morning that it took me to let go and have some willingness to turn this over and to have some humility. Because humility, you know, the definition of humility is I'm no better than anyone and I'm no worse than anyone. I am just right there in the middle with everyone else. And in order to act in humility, I have to be willing to look at that character defect that tells me I'm better than somebody. You know, I'm better than him. I'm sure I'm right. And the thing is, and it's interesting in families and marriage, we affect each other's lives. So I can't just leave my relationship and go off and be recovered. I still have to be in the relationship and learn how to set healthy boundaries. How is anything going to get done by yelling and screaming and raging? It's never going to get done. And so I have to pause and take a step back and look at my little list and say, where do I want to go here? Do I want to take the road of recovery that says set a healthy boundary that says when you fill in the blank, I feel fill in the blank, and I need fill in the blank. So in this case, it could have been resolved if I could have paused, as the big book says, pause when we're agitated. And I could have said, when you told me you were going to get this done today and you didn't, I feel betrayed and dismissed, and I need you to keep your word to me. End of conversation. I don't have to rage. I don't have to go after my character defects. I'm acting off of the asset side. And I'm acting with humility because I'm vulnerable enough to say, I feel betrayed. I feel dismissed. And those are hard words to say to some people because you don't know if you're going to get attacked back or I didn't do that or whatever's going to happen. It's none of my business how people react. But if I'm humble enough to take a breath and act out on the right side of the boulder in order to be productive and useful in that relationship and in our marriage. Let's see, where am I? So the seventh step, the humility piece, is when I say I'm humbly asking God to remove my defects of character, I'm asking God to change me at depth. And, you know, this whole thing comes down to when I recover, I change. Nobody else changes. I change. But then I become attractive. People are attracted to recovery. When I behave in a civilized, loving, understanding way to my husband, he's attracted to that recovery. And look at him. He came to me with an amend before I even had any willingness. That's a man who's not even in program and he's getting it. Because most of the time, our relationship operates like that. And it's a miracle to see that happening when I'm the only one who has to change. And when I go into those character defects, and I was really broken when I you know, I hadn't done that in so long. And then I watched myself rage. You know, it's just really, it's easy to go into morbid self-reflection, and it's easy to go into humiliation, and easy to go into self-loathing and just operate on more character defects. It's real easy. But to just be able to say, God, take all of me, good and bad. That's our seventh step prayer. God, change me. Pray for him. Change me. The other thing about this this bookmark that I really want to emphasize, and I emphasize this to my sponsees, because it's really easy to go in and look at my liabilities and forget to look at my assets, and it's really easy to go into shame. So that whole thing, I went into shame, and it's not useful. You know, my primary purpose is to be useful to somebody, to bring the message, to carry the message. If I'm not being useful and I'm operating in these and then going, oh, I'm such a horrible person, it's shame. And what we come here that we get freedom from is shame. And so I have to look at all of this. There is good in me, there is bad, and there is always, always, always choice. And I can always choose. But there will be times that I fall. And when I fall, it's just information. I just went around on the left side operating out of character defects. It's just information. There needs to be no shame attached. And when I can let go of that shame and humiliation, that's when I get humility. Humility. I'm equal to everyone else. No one's better. I'm not better. No one's worse. I'm just the bozo on the bus along with everybody else for the ride. We're all the same. And that true sense of self, of my good and bad, is also the freedom. The freedom of humility. Like, wow, I'm just another one of everyone. And I'm going to fail, and I'm going to succeed. So I'm going to read just a couple of things here that I pulled out of the 12 and 12 that I thought was really useful words on humility. Humility brings an end to feelings of inadequacy, self-absorption, and status seeking. So I don't have to look for attention. I don't have to look for status. And I don't have to feel inadequate. I've redone this 3 times now in a year. This is a living document for me. So as I see my character defects change, I change and shift. Like, whoa, boy, I notice I'm doing this more. And I add it to the list. But you know what has come off the list? Low self-esteem. I have freedom from feeling inadequate anymore. It came off the list the last iteration. And that's a miracle, because I have more humility and I feel more equal to everyone. Not better, not worse. Humility means we will no longer be horrified when we realize we have yet another defect. So, okay, I got another defect. Look at what came up. No shame. No morbid reflection, just, I got another defect. God, I humbly ask you to remove this and protect me from myself, because this is all about myself. This is all about myself. And as it says on page 14, the key is we must destroy our self-centeredness in order to work this program. So, the other things about humility is true self-knowledge. And humility is accepting the good with the bad. It's not pretending to be something that I'm not. Not pretending what I think you want me to be. It's honest. It's vulnerable. And I think that is really key. The vulnerable piece of it. It is so scary to be vulnerable. And I'm so familiar with these character defects over here. They're so comfortable. It's self-righteousness is so easy for me. And vulnerability is not easy. Being vulnerable and walking up to my husband and saying something that cracks open my chest and pours out real emotion and real feelings that I've never either known about or had a hard time feeling, that is real vulnerability and that is real humility. And false pride, which is the opposite of humility, is presenting what I'm not to the world. And it's presenting that I am someone that is without flaws. I'm loaded with flaws. And one day at a time in recovery, I get to be free from those. I get to turn them over to God all day long, because they come up all day long, and I get to be free from those. It's trying to get attention by faking to be humble. And boy, did I fake humility. Like, oh, I'm so humble. Oh, no, really, really. You know, faking humility is not going to get us to humility. And and that false pride piece is just, I need attention because I'm not good enough. I'm inadequate. And true humility, we are good enough. We are adequate. And even with all of our flaws. And false pride is also around looking for validation and approval. And once real humility comes, we no longer get that because our higher power provides that and provides that in this sixth and seventh step. I can't go and do my ninth step amends without really, really having a good handle on six and seven. I got to know my character defects. I got to understand how I operate in them, how I choose them. And I have to have willingness. You know, I'm the faucet. The valve is willingness, and God is the flow. That's it. I don't do it. God does it through me. God does it for me. But if I don't turn the valve of willingness, I can't get there. And then to also have the humility to know that I'm no better or no worse than anyone. My husband especially, because my husband is the gift that comes to me to give me every day an opportunity to show up walking around the right side of the boulder, walking around in the middle column that says, do this instead, practice this instead, realistic goals, caring for others. Understanding, trust, trusting God and trusting that my husband is not the person that my addict wants to believe he is. So I am, I hope that was useful. That's what I hope. And I just really want to also say that this book saved my life. And getting a sponsor to take me through this book, who is speaking in the next room, and has saved my life. And I now sponsor in this book. I read this book every single day to somebody. And sponsorship is key. So really getting my life where I turn myself and all my self-related character defects over to God and humbly ask if I can be of service by helping others by reading this book and taking them through the steps. This is the miracle of my life, and I'm happy, joyous, and free, and 90 pounds lighter. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Marie, for your testimony, your experience, strength, and hope. And at this time, we will have either pitches at the front or questions, so shares. We ask that you stick to the topic of the meeting. We invite a few members wishing to share. Tell us where you're from, and the pitches are limited to 3 minutes and allow as many as possible to share. Please remember that the session is being recorded and that you each have signed an audio release at the registration. Does anyone have any questions or would like to come up and share on their experience? Oh, thanks, Priscilla.
I'm Priscilla, compulsive overeater and food addict.
Hi, Priscilla.
And I just wanted to share a little story on step seven. So, this is my analogy of how God is with me. I see a chiropractor, and I went to the chiropractor, so that was my willingness. I went and showed up and laid on the table. And I was laying there, and my chiropractor was trying to crack my back. And I was so nervous. I was completely tight. And he goes, Priscilla, I can help you. I would love to help you. But we need to work together as partners. I need you to relax. I need you to relax your back and trust me so that I can crack your back and get in and heal your back. And to me, that's step seven with God. Step six, I learn my character defects. And then step seven is letting go, trusting, and relying on God. That I can't change them myself. I can't control it. But if I just show up and ask God and do my part of relaxing and trusting, and that just brings me back to step three, which is where, and step two, they're just all so together for me, but where I see all these miracles of God performing miracles in other lives, and with my chiropractor, I saw other patients getting fixed and helped and healed through him. And so with God and with my step seven, the more I saw him performing miracles, a 90-pound weight loss with this person, and this person is able to control their temper now and different things like that, then I see God wants good for me. God wants to get in and heal me too. And I can trust and relax and allow him to do that work. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marie. My name is Marcy. I'm a compulsive overeater. And my latest insight on step six and seven, I have a character defect of being late. I prayed about that. Step seven said it talks about my usefulness, and there are times I wondered, when I was going down the road and then there was an accident or something else happened, if higher power, if God wasn't keeping me, making me late to make somebody else feel better, you know, that they, you know, if they had come in 2 minutes before me, at least I was later than they were, and using it that way. So I did accept that. But someone said that to do my part, I need to look at the opposite. And what is the opposite of being late? It's being early. And let me tell you, if I just even say that to myself, it clenches my stomach. It's like, why? What am I going to do there? Oh, my goodness. I might be bored. Amazing things come into my head. And I just wanted to share that with you, that my part is to look at the opposite, and when I open myself up to that, it gives a space for God to work. And I, so far, it's worked maybe half the time, and it's not done yet. God isn't done with me yet, but I just wanted to share that with you. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Mike. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm from Aurora. Anyway, for me, one of the things that's helped me is when I'm doing six and seven and four and five, I not only do a resentment inventory when I need to write, but I do a fear inventory, and that helps me get to the spiritual malady that's causing the problem. And an example was I did that work, and this was a while ago, and what came up is that I didn't trust God. And that's why I was trying to take control of everything, because I lacked that trust. And so a friend in program said I needed to, well, help me write a prayer of asking God to show me that I could trust him. And so I did that prayer, and I was driving on Hamden, and if you move from Denver, it's not a fun street to drive on. And I was in the Aurora side of it, and I was changing lanes, and I switched from the middle lane to the right lane, or was switching, and there was a car coming up fast, and I hadn't seen him, and so I had to go back in the middle lane, but somebody had already taken the middle lane. And so we're going back and forth, and my car and his car hit. And I'm on my way to my Saturday morning meeting, and we pull over, and I get out, and I'm not mad, which was a miracle by itself, and neither was he, and we were both trying to solve the problem. We looked at our cars, and there was absolutely no damage. and the two tires had hit each other. And that was God showing me that no matter what mistakes I made, He's got my back. And that made some big changes in my life from that point on. And so for me, 6 and 7 really work when we work them, and we have the humility, as was discussed, to turn it over. And I believe that not only are my character defects there, but they're lifted from me, and I'm able to live my life with that specific defect. Of course, I continue to get reminded about new defects as I continue to work the program, and I don't think I'm ever going to be perfect. They keep coming up. And thank you very much for your share.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Marie, and everybody for sharing. Just a couple things. I really appreciate the encouragement to not get hung up on the different wording, and to find, in my experience, to find something that really kind of resonates with me. Because when I use that, and when I, for me, the thing that came up for me, the term that really makes sense is using the term old ideas, like these old, you know, the liabilities, character defects. Like, these are just old ideas that have been working for me for, you know, that's how I made sense of the world. And now I get to hold these old ideas up to the light of how are they working now? You know, is it really true that I have to run the show? Is it really true that I need other people to be a certain way? Is it really true that I need to be a certain way? Is it really true that I need everyone else to behave and stay in their places and, you know, do X, Y, Z instead of really trusting that, I guess, God's got this figured out in differently than I would do it, and probably, I'm just willing to believe, probably way better. So that was really helpful for me. So I'm glad to hear that. And the other thing I'm feeling grateful for is the clarity that these steps are, there's nothing shameful. These steps need not be shameful. I think there is, at least for me, shame has been really a go-to, kind of like a safe place, and or at least a familiar place, I'll say. And it goes along with that old idea that I need to be a certain way, and which makes it impossible to look at these defects with any kind of humility, because there just wasn't space for that in that type of thinking. So so just being willing to trust that. And I guess my experience in doing this is that it's really hard to get started. Like, it's like, I'm like, oh, I just don't even want to do it. And then once I get started, it's like, okay, I can keep going. And then once I get rolling, it's like actually fun. And then when I share it with my sponsor, it's amazing. Like, it's, the light is coming in, and it's a wonderful positive experience instead of the, you know, the rehashing of all the terrible things. So, so I'm just really grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me share.
We have just a couple more minutes, free.
Hello, everybody. I'm Wanda, recovering compulsive overeater. I live in Abilene, Texas, and I'm happy to be here today in Denver, and just enjoy the fellowship and the recovery that's here. And I thank you for this. I'm going to take it back to Abilene with me, and we're going to talk about it. Some of us are doing the new 12-step workbook that's designed to be done in 14 weeks, and we're not through with it yet, but we're just past step 7. And what I know about step 7 is that it's one of the maintenance steps. It's not one we just do and hope for the best. You know, we think about 10, 11, and 12 being the maintenance steps, but I think 6 and 7 are pretty much the maintenance steps, because and doing them the first time, I was hopeful that I would be so changed that everybody would notice it, and I wouldn't act out anymore. But what someone told me was when she had me to memorize the 7-step prayer, my sponsor said, you know, we ask God to remove our character defects that are standing in the way of our usefulness to God and other people. So all of your character defects may not be removed. Well, that I thought, well, but I'm different. They will be. But they weren't, because they kept cropping up, and they kept cropping up. And, you know, to this day, they'll still crop up. And I have to do step 6 and 7. And 6 is, about 2 lines in the big book. But it's difficult sometimes to get willing to do some of the stuff that I feel like maybe it's time I did. And so anyway, the workbook has really helped us because it digs deep and it really goes into some questions that it asked me that I haven't been asking of myself before, and that the work that I did with the sponsor and the other workbooks that I've done, which is quite a bit of work actually. In 30 years, we get to do a lot of work on ourselves. But I've just been realizing that God removes the defects that are standing in the way of our usefulness, and the more we give, the more we're useful. I believe then he continues to show us what our defects are and begin to remove them. And I love the OA 12 and 12 where it talks about our thinking. In our prayers we ask God to direct our thinking. And then the big book said, the OA 12 and 12 in step 7 talks about that we will cease telling ourselves that we're not good enough, and we will cease telling ourselves that we're failures, and we'll cease telling ourselves that we are flawed, and then we will begin to look at our assets more and more and more and tell ourselves that we are good people. And these things that are written here, these are wonderful, that we can just tell ourselves that we're loving and persistent and optimistic. And I just think step 6 and 7 for me are where we get to really see ourselves, decide what we want to do, talk with a sponsor. And I will tell you, I have never been without a sponsor in over 30 years in program. I could not have done any of this that I have done without someone showing me that it could be done, that they had done it, for one thing. But also encouraging me, you can do this, you need to do this, you'll think how better, much better you'll feel. And my sponsor, I can get on the phone with her and she can ask me a question that I don't even think to ask myself. And so when she starts digging around, and I don't want to answer them sometimes, and I tell her she's getting too nosy with me, but but that's what's helping me to grow and be the person that I want to be. So I'm grateful that we can grow in this program as much as we want to with these steps. I think the steps can take us anywhere we want to go. We can get relief, or we can get recovery, and then we can get that spiritual growth. We can get that the growth that comes with just maturing in the program. And I'm just very grateful that I've been allowed to work this program as long as I have, and I'm a lifer. I'll be around a long time. Thank you.
Thanks again to our speaker, Marie, for your service and sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. So if you'd like everyone to stand and join hands. While we do that, just to announce, it's a break for lunch, and then we'll be meeting back at 1:30. There is in here there will be keeping the peace, talking about an action plan, and in the next room it will be talking about physical, emotional, and spiritual abstinence. So, just a moment of silence for those suffering in and out of these walls.